Okay, good afternoon. We're going to begin here. Okay, welcome. We've almost made it through another year. Just a few things as opening remarks. We're doing well with the budget again through the rest of this fiscal year and planning for next. I don't really have any new theme to tell you, except being, you know, just reiterating once again how extremely grateful we are that the university is so supportive of our collections budget to a degree that this just hardly ever happens, and for which we're very, very appreciative. We don't yet know what salary policy is for next year, but we do anticipate that there will be merit raises all the way around. So we can, as soon as we know, we'll let you know. We've gone through the other major thing that I worry about. Basically, what I worry about is money and getting positions filled. So I'm very much in. We're very much involved in raising money for Fiat Lux and for other priorities. We have had the Friends are very much on this, particularly a small group of very dedicated ladies who are. Friends in every sense of the term, and who are working untold hours as volunteers on our behalf. They are working as hard as I am, really. They are very, very good to us. We've had two salons, one here and one in Montreal. 45 people or so were there, and then one that was that one was hosted by Janet and John Blanchford, and that Dr. Blanchford's aunt was the Trenholm Dean Endowment, and so they are very people who have been very close to us and very good to us for a long time. So they were very generous again in opening up their home for a salon. There were, as I said, about 45 people there. I did a small presentation thanks to a number of you. We had a very nice little video of what some 21st century libraries are all about. And we could point out the sort of things that we want to do so people could visualize them, gave a nice little talk. And there was a really nice buzz from that. I repeated it, the same sort of thing with about the same number of people, also at Chancellor Meehan's home in Toronto, and with the same sort of success, and we're going to be following up on those events. We'll probably be having several others in the next year, one in San Francisco, one in New York, and perhaps in some other places, and there's just a great deal of excitement going on with all of this. Just so that you know, these are self-funded. Nothing that we do like this is funded from operations money at all. It's all money that comes from donors. It takes a little bit of money to raise a lot of money, but I want to assure people that this isn't money that's coming from what I view to be inappropriate sources. So, AGM event. So, these are... Joan and Clifford Hatch. And the Hatch sisters, they were the founders of the Parents Fund. And the Hatch sisters are being recognized this evening at the annual general meeting of the Friends for their long, long-term support, very generous support of the library. For instance, some of the equipment that we have in the Research Commons is due directly to a gift that they gave us last year. They give us several, five-figure gifts every year, and we are we're very, very happy to recognize Mary and Gail Hatch at the Friends meeting this afternoon. Gail Todgem and Mary Hatch. Okay. I encourage anyone who hasn't already RSVP'd to the event. It's going to be held in Osler, and anyone is still welcome to attend. It's good to always be there to cheer for those people who have been so good to us and to say thank you. Okay, Suntrade. The button makers are very popular. A little bit of money can go a long way. So I want to particularly encourage people to come to the sweet retreat tomorrow. Apparently, we are going to have some of our very own talent showcased at that, and it's just fun to come to. So please come by. About half the people in this room have a music background, so you know, you'll have to decide who it is, because I mean there are so many people here. As I said, I'm a little short on violins, but I think I could have a very funky orchestra here. And all the proceeds obviously go to Suntrade. Okay? Holiday party. Everybody knows this building now, right? This is the building that had Fiat looks on it in terms of our Fiat looks. This is the door to the old, when we didn't have the 50s Redpath Library. It was one of the ways you got into the library. And we thought that the holiday card and invitation this year will be just very simple. By golly, I'm putting Fiat looks on everything I can. Get those Fiat looks buttons and put them all over and wear them. I mean, so we're going to be holding it in a little bit different place this year. There's a wonderful meeting room on the, what floor is it? The eighth floor of the music building. And we get to go keep a little company with our music colleagues over there. So please plan to come, and we will have a very good time. We are asking you to wear your, if you want to wear your silliest holiday sweater. We're talking serious kitsch here. Nothing that's elegant, nothing that's nice. We want really poor taste. Well, nothing kitschy, not pornographic, okay? But please feel free. And finally, we're having a major exhibit that we will be housing next, starting on January the 12th. It's called Every Stamp a Story. There'll be a lecture. We'll have the Postmaster of Canada here. And it's going to be a very, very big event, and we invite everyone to come to that too. David Lenk recently donated his collection of over 50,000 stamps to Rare Books and Special Collections. And on display are going to be more than 200 natural history stamps from over 135 countries from the mid-19th century to the present. And it's going to be on the first floor in the exhibit cases, in the elevator lobby on the fourth floor. So it's going to be a great exhibit as well. So with that, I need to ask, we're squeezing Jen in to give us a public announcement here. We thought we'd take this opportunity to make sure we got all of you.
There are plenty of seats over here on this side of the room if you all want to come by.
Yeah. You don't have to stand if you don't want to.
I don't know why I can't get this on. There we go. All right, so really quickly, we've gotten questions from a number of you who have heard in the news that there was a cyber attack at Carleton University earlier this week, and it's something called ransomware. So I just wanted to give you guys a really quick primer on what this is and what McGill is thinking about in terms of the attacks like this. So ransomware refers to a specific type of computer attack where the virus comes in on your computer or your server and encrypts all of the files so that you can't read them, and then demands money for the decryption keys so that you can read your data again. So at universities with big research programs, for example, this is obviously a problem, even if it's, you know, it can happen on your computer, but it can also happen on your server. And when they tend to attack universities like this, they tend to cripple networks. So what's happened at Carleton is their email servers are not working, and their voice over IP phones on the first day weren't even working. So these can be really disruptive to a university. Once this kind of attack gets into a network, it can spread really, really quickly. The University of Calgary had a similar attack last year and actually paid the people off. And apparently ransom requests are asked for in Bitcoin because it's a lot harder to track Bitcoin transfers than typical money bank transfers, so people tend to get away with it. So we still don't know yet exactly how this got into the Carlton network in the first place. It obviously spread quickly once it did, but just very briefly, there are three ways things like this can happen. The first way is that an operating system has a security vulnerability that's not patched. And if that computer's attached to the network, there are bots that go out there and look for computers that are vulnerable to that security problem. If you were a staff member at McGill, your computer is managed by ICS, and it automatically gets security updates automatically when they come out. So best practice, as I think you all know, is to log off your computer at night but leave it running so that these updates that run overnight come and protect your computer. So be sure to do that. If you're a librarian and have an academic laptop, you manage that computer and you are responsible for making sure the security upgrades happen. There are settings on your computer so that you can make sure you download the latest ones as they come in. Always say yes, install these things. So don't leave yourself vulnerable. Another way these attacks can come in is if you, as a user, run malicious software. Usually, when this happens, you've gotten tricked into doing it. It's an email attachment that you probably shouldn't have opened, or it's a file you downloaded from the internet somewhere that isn't what it purports to be. So the advice here is just be careful about what you run and make sure you trust it before you actually run anything. And the third way that cyber attacks like this happen is somebody gets your credentials and can log into your computer remotely or otherwise. So always be careful for emails that you get that say, click here to type your username and password. They could very well be phishing emails from somebody nefarious who's trying to get your access. And once they have that access, they have access to the McGill network and can get in. So again, we don't know exactly how this started at Carleton. We don't have any kind of attack like this going on at McGill right now, but you never know. These things are dangerous and they can really be disruptive to university. So be aware, be careful. We'll be sending out more information from campus IT and from the library once we know more about exactly what's happening here, but I just wanted to give you a quick update because we've already had some questions. Is there anything I can answer before I give the floor back? All right. Good. Thank you, everybody.
We've got about 4 seats left, so now is a good time to make your move because we've got a wonderful agenda today where you might want to be seated. Okay, spot here too. Great. Good.
Yes.
Thanks. I wanted to take just a couple of minutes to update you on what's happening with the Royal Vic project. So where are we today? Shortly before the Royal Vic Hospital moved to the Glen Yards, McGill struck a task force in April 2015, so a year and a half ago, to craft a vision for the soon-to-be-vacated facility. And because before proceeding with any kind of possible design and before determining if McGill is actually going to take over the Royal Vic, it's all still a question, this analysis happening now, before moving ahead, it was essential that a reason for moving into the space was nailed down. So the task force was a key component of the feasibility study that's underway. And since the task force was struck and led by senior members of McGill's planning department, a call was put out for proposals for how could our academic mission be met in the space. So all faculties were contacted, all service units, and we submitted proposals, comprehensive assessment was undertaken. And in May of this year, and you've heard about this, but I'm just reiterating, two academic pillars were selected to anchor the Royal Vic. And those two pillars are sustainability systems and public policy. And the fancy picture that's going to come up next kind of gives you the development concept that I'm just going to very briefly run through. So what is sustainability systems? There's three clusters involved, molecular and material systems, earth systems and urban systems. And the clusters associated with public policy are the Max Bell School of Public Policy, which is primarily the Faculty of Arts, and the School of Population and Global Health, Epidemiology, Faculty of Medicine driven. So those are the academic anchors, but all of the services that would support a neighborhood or a small campus in this sector of our downtown campus were approached. So groups like Teaching and Learning Services, the library, student services, the registrar, food services, all the groups that make a neighborhood function effectively. So when we talk about the clusters kind of being the anchors, there are also institutes and centers affiliated with those clusters. So institutes like Institute for the Study, Canadian, let me make sure I've got the title right, Institute for the Study of Canada, Institute for the Study of International Development, and so on. So these groups will be up there, along with institutes and centers, discovery hubs, and the shared and support services. So what does that mean? So the shared and common spaces will include a library presence with a grand reading room in the historic portion of the Royal Vic, e-classroom, staff spaces for librarians and staff. But what I think is most interesting is if you think of this as a new neighborhood with extensive teaching labs, large classrooms, small classrooms, mixed spaces that are multidisciplinary, the kind of spaces that when students are up there will be there, but the spaces that are shared can be booked by people coming out of classes, just going up to do group study, and there'll be a whole range of teaching and learning spaces in the area. So I mentioned the center, teams of people from across the units and faculties defined our space needs. And of course, we ask for more space than there is space available. So it was defining our needs, proposing what we think would be appropriate, and it will then be passed on to the architects to figure out how to make all this work. So we've defined our space, we've defined our service needs, and a document has been created so that it will go to the P7 and Board of Governors to consider. And then it will go on to the architects to figure out how do we make all this work. But it has to meet the academic mission and the space needs expressed by the units. So we're really delighted to be part of the vision. It will be a very interesting neighborhood. It will have a permanent population of about 3,000 faculty, grad students, postdocs, undergraduates working up there, as well as a floating population of another 3,000 undergrads who will be up there working in the labs, being taught in the classrooms. So you're looking at about 6,000 people flowing in and out of the space permanently or just flowing in and out. So it will be a really interesting new learning environment. It is truly multidisciplinary and multifunctional. The units are co-located, and it encourages cross-pollination and innovation. So we're pleased to be involved in the early stages. I do want to stress that nothing is fixed in stone. It's conceptual. But the important message I wanted to bring to everyone is that the library will be in the neighborhood, and we're very pleased about that. If you have any questions, I'll try to answer them, or you can send me an email and I'll direct you to the right sources.
Just curious, is the funding already in place to do the renovation to
No.
the to enable this vision to occur? Not
no. What's the funding that's available is the $8 million feasibility study budget. So McGill, $4 million, the province, $4 million. And that's what it will cost to figure out what we've asked for. Can we make it happen? What's the state of the building? How would you estimate the cost to do what we've asked to do? So, and then at that point, if it looks like it's feasible after the feasibility study, then decision will have to be made about, yes, we'll do it, and how is the funding going to flow? But we're just at the feasibility stage now. Yes?
Simply going to be people giving support, or is there going to be units stored working from there?
Yes, people will be working from there, and there will be space that's defined as the library. The collection will be virtually electronic with some print to support probably the public policy side more than the STEM side, but no, there will be librarians and staff, reading room facilities. And then everyone will share these shared spaces, which will be bookable. Great. I'll turn it over to the next. Great. Who's the first cab off the rank? Good.
Very good. We'll
Thank
plug you.
You
in. There's something over there.
So we're happy to report today on the innovation, one of the innovation projects, and the first one that our group is talking about is Digital Touch Table project. So the project was going on since the last academic year, and we are glad to say that we are now in the third exhibit made on a touch table. First of all, you can ask yourself, what is touch table? So without going into super technicalities, it's a giant iPad. Really, honestly, it's a giant iPad on steroids, and I have some specs. I put some specs on it for technically minded people here. So it's an amazing thing. It's a 55-inch screen. It runs on an Intel Core i7, Windows 10. It uses PCAP touch technology, and it has 60 simultaneous touch points. It doesn't mean you need to touch all 60 at once, but you can. So why do we have it at the library, at McGill Library, and what we can do with it for our users? So first of all, the touch tables, they can be used to create new learning experiences for our users and enhance the interaction with the exhibited materials. The touch table allows to interact with the digital surrogates of the documents that is in a way that is not possible with the physical objects, because it takes the exhibits beyond the confines of the physical space, and it allows access to multiple users at the same time. Because if you have just one leaf of a medieval manuscript, how 20 students can use it at the same time? Instead of passing it all around, they can just gather together and see it. So what else it can do? It has a really incredible resolution, so it allows to see tiny details of exhibited objects and medieval manuscripts, all the illumination. You can compare multiple copies. You can see minutiae of the illumination on the screen. It's really amazing. But also, even in terms of content, with all the incredible material that is available on the web, you can include in the exhibit not only locally digitized items, but because it's connected to the internet, you can always use the items that were digitized and put in digital repositories by other institutions. This is what we actually did for other exhibits. And how do you do it? Basically, if you want to you create your exhibit on your computer, we have a software that's called Intuiface. And our team developed quite an expertise with the software, so whoever uses it, the touch table next, we will be quite pleased to help you with it. And then you load, and you let students interact with the exhibit. And now we have it actually at the Law Library. Currently we have an exhibit about the Nuremberg trials because this year is the year of the anniversary of the end of the most important of the Nuremberg trials. And for this exhibit, you have images. We went for a blended media approach. So we have physical items, photos, books, archival materials exhibited in the traditional exhibition cases. In the same time, we have multimedia videos. We have links to Holocaust museums. We have links to testimonies of the survivors of concentration camps that people can listen and view on the digital touch table. So it's quite an amazing tool, and we're really, really happy for the funding that we got from the library to use it. So next author.
Thank you. So, there we go. So sorry I don't have any better pictures, but the Osler Library was where we premiered the touch table, and the timing was actually really exceptional because we had lined up an exhibit about blood, so sort of ideas, medical ideas and cultural ideas about blood from the medieval period through the 20th century. We were collaborating with some from postdocs in SSOM, or Social Studies of Medicine, who were interested in putting this on. And they had actually, in sort of conceiving their exhibit, they had already approached me about incorporating archival footage. So they really wanted to use a lot of these older videos documentaries about the first experiments isolating blood types and early transfusion and things like that. So this was a really prime opportunity to premiere the touch table. So again, the level of student engagement that went into this was really, really interesting to see. They were really, really keen on figuring out the software, figuring out what the touch table could offer. And I think it was a really interesting component in this sort of blended exhibit that had this audiovisual material, these videos, as well as traditional materials. Prior to that, we used the touch table just in the library, in the public space, I would put up our various digital collections, so put up the website and try to make, you know, put up some sort of appealing pictures and try to get people to come in, flip through some pictures, get them interested, have sort of a public display of things that we already have digitized there for people who are coming in, able to, you know, flip through, and just try to showcase that a little bit. All right. Next exhibit.
Next. As you can see, the touch table has been moving around the library system, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the music library. And so in the music library, I created two user experiences, one for John Reyes' musical universe, which was a celebration of a Montreal composer and a former dean of the Schulich School of Music. And so I took the touch table and connected users to YouTube videos of autobiographical material on John Reyes. We went to his websites, which had the concerts that were taking place. I also directed users to pages that were selections of his scholarship, so the pages through the material in his in music journals. And then for the Helmut Wolf collection, I took the digital objects that we had used for posters, and I put them into a carousel, and as the carousel moves around the touch table, when the user actually touches the image, the display card pops up, and it corresponds to the right image. And then also during this exhibition, there was an audio recording of an organ recital going on in the background. So it gives you some sense of the interactivity. And then for both of the tables, we had links out to a web survey that Anna and I constructed. So we were collecting user feedback. A little bit about our upcoming year. With funds from the Dean's office, we are purchasing a second touch table, a motorized stand, and the big excitement is a travel case. So what this means is that the touch table will come assembled, will stay assembled, and can move from library to library. We will have licenses for the composing and playing of user experiences on the second touch table. And we're going to increase our capacity for data tracking. So this is tracking different data points in the user experience. We are now supported by Digital Initiatives staff, so we welcome Greg Houston officially to our project team. So Greg will be helping us out. And upcoming exhibitions, we have quite a few scheduled. You can see them here on the screen, and you can also look on the intranet. We are putting all of our project documentation, our schedules, some of our photographs on the intranet, and you can just search touch tables. And I'd like to finish up with one more slide, really enticing you about an upcoming exhibition that Rare Books and Special Collections, Jennifer Garland, will be preparing in the spring. And it will be to celebrate the World War I memorials that are across campus. So we have a great amount of art and monuments and then these beautiful stained glass windows. And so they will be in a touch table exhibition. And it's just another example of how the touch table allows us to have large objects in an exhibition. It's very, very different than the physical piece. So thanks for your attention, and I really invite you to think about how the touch table could be used in your library and to get in touch with any of us, because now we will have two. Thank you.
Any questions?
We haven't had that case yet, Rowena, but I think that we probably now we'll have two to move around. We can think through that. Yeah.
Had the touch table not in an exhibition has been at Osler while the students were programming it. And I did think about wanting to put it into service right away and to try to make it useful right away. So we did put it in the reading room, and I would pull up digitized exhibitions basically from our website. So I would pull up, well, Osler things mostly, but pull up these digital exhibitions and put photos there and sort of invite people to engage with them in the reading room and all that. We also used it for promotion. So as we were installing the exhibition, before it was installed, we had created just a video file of lots of different images of things that were going to appear in the exhibition. So we used it sort of to promote what was going to be appearing soon. So that's what we've done so far, and something to think about, though.
Yeah, and I can add also that it can be used in classes as well. So because basically it runs regular Windows, it has web browsers, so it can be used to show how to search library catalogs, how to interact with images. There are a lot of uses beyond exhibitions. It can be used as a teaching tool. It's an amazing teaching tool.
I was hoping no one was going to ask about that.
The survey was beautiful. We didn't get the responses we wanted.
Oh.
So we have some paper. We have some online in the music library, but I don't know what happened. So I did get a few, but not what I really expected. So the free version of SurveyMonkey was plenty. Yeah, so...
We have, but again, there were so few that it's hard to actually derive anything. But we'll be working on that for you. Yeah.
And now for something a little different.
So last year, Tara and I started a program to support the international students, and we adopted a model of the peer learning. So we hired two international students. One is from one is Arabic-speaking undergraduate students from the mechanical engineering, and another one is a graduate student speaking Chinese as a native language, and he is a doctoral student. So we had these two students as our ambassadors, and then we set two goals for our project. So the first goal is to increase the awareness of library services among international students, specifically in engineering, and then the second goal is to improve the international students' information literacy competencies. So with that in mind, so we carried out some activities. So the last year, the first thing we did is to create a Facebook page. We call it the Multilingual Services for Engineering Students. And we had our library ambassadors to frequently post on library events and services that we thought are most relevant to international students. And then we translated the McGill Library Welcome Week into private language. And we also created a multilingual guide to library services in English. And we so these two,
both the video and the multilingual guide are actually available on the library's website. So we hope the students watching those multilingual materials will have a feeling that McGill Library actually cares about the specific needs, and we are making efforts to help them make better use of the library and its resources. With the Facebook page, so we were able to kind of strengthen the relationships with international groups. So our students actually helped to build many connections with the student groups on campus. They also connect many unions that are staffed by McGill staff, but actually provide service to the students. So for example, the International Student Services, so we had our library ambassadors to present at their international student orientation last winter, and we constantly sought help from them to help us promote our program and activities. So this year, we are continuing with the activities we started last year, and we also currently we are working on online tutorials on citing, because we saw that's another challenge for the international students. And next semester, we have planned to assess the efficacy of the multilingual materials that we have created.
Okay, so you'll get an idea of what the Facebook page looks like in a minute. Here we go. So I'd just like to say that the students have really been integral in designing this program. So they came up with the name. They've really been the ones that have populated the Facebook page. And they built the multilingual guide to library services. So we kind of are there to help out, but they're doing a lot of the work. So it's really been a nice collaboration with the students, seeing things from their perspective and from the perspective of international students in particular. So the Facebook page is here. We encourage you to like it. So if you're on Facebook, please find MSES, McGill Library, and you can like the page. And you'll see there's regular posts that are coming out that the students are putting up. If you want to go to the next. Yeah, so you can see there's regular posts that they make both here and to the blog that we have for Schulich Libraries. So oftentimes the things will be posted in both places, and then the McGill Library blog and Facebook page have also been linking to a lot of the content. So that's been nice to get these things advertised in various ways. And then we also see a list here of the groups that they've reached out to. So our international student ambassadors have reached out to a number of campus groups and liked their pages. So we're developing links with those other communities on campus. And this is the video, so you probably already know about the welcome video, and you've probably seen that there are lots of different versions of it now. So we have a French version, we have a Persian version, we have a Spanish version, we have a Chinese version, and we have an Arabic version. So this has been a real collaborative effort on behalf of a lot of people who work in this library system, as well as the library ambassadors, in getting these translations up and, well, first of all, created and then recorded. So this project's been really great for that. That's great, thank you. Now the multilingual guide to library services. So far we have this in English, Arabic, Chinese, and French, and we hope to expand into other languages as well. One thing the students have been really keen to do is to recruit their colleagues to help. So they've been putting up posts, and they will continue to be asking for volunteers among their international student peers who might be interested in translating the page into additional languages. So that gives you an idea of the kinds of things they've been working on. In terms of funding, we've been really, really appreciative to have the Innovation and Services Fund support us last year and again this year. The work-study program has been really helpful as well. We've been able to have a lot of hours for the students because of work-study. And then there's just a lot of you in the room and abroad and in the library system in general who have been really, really supportive of this project. So we've got a lot of skill sets that the students really benefited from. So they learned things like different social media things that we're using here in McGill Library from our communications people. They learned about how to do... how to find information that's specialized in Chinese, for example, from Meezy. So they've really benefited from the skill set that we have here in the library. So that's been really fantastic. A lot of you have also helped out with the translations and editing the translations that the students wrote. So we thank you as well. So that's the project. That's where we're at right now. And hopefully we'll have more to report on next year. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are both terrific efforts. I'm very impressed. Thank you all for taking the time to come up with ideas, to put in the applications, and then to do something once you got the money. We've done some amazing things with really what doesn't amount to a whole lot of money in the grand scheme of things. And those are both really, really good efforts. So now HR update. It said, how did that happen?
You did it. Hello, everybody. So we'll start with the usual order of the welcoming. I'm sure that you must have read in the weekly update or will be reading that we'll be welcoming in the month of January Jeffrey Archer, our new Associate Dean User Services, but also Francesca Freddy. I don't know if you remember, in the month of October-ish, we did interview for the Schulich position. So Francesca was the selected candidate, and she accepted our offer as this morning. So welcome, Francesca. A little bit of a welcome back for Catherine Hans, who will be coming back on Monday in ASOL after her mat leave. Also a little bit of a welcome back for Jillian Mills, who joined Islamic Studies in the month of October. If you remember, Jillian used to work at the Life Sciences Library in 2011. And also ASO, in 2 weeks, December 12, we'll be welcoming John Sawaya, who will be the newest addition to the senior library clerk pool, the service desk. John, for some of you, the name may sound familiar, work at the music library as a student navigator for almost 2 years. Internal movement, Lauren Goldman. Hi. It was the selected candidate in the search for an M-term communication and events administrator, and we already put her to use today for the service spin. There's also Ariane. She's not with us today, but Ariane Kourakis got promoted to the position of specialized cataloging editor, still in Anna's group. And there's also Elisa Tasbihi from the Islamic Studies Library, who will be joining Megan's team as a specialized cataloging editor, and she'll be joining Megan's team, who's not here either, on December 5th. We'll welcome, yes, do comes farewell. So in the month of November, we were very sad to hear about Benedetta and Peter leaving us. They will be starting in January 2017 a brand new adventure, the new adventure of retirement. Benedetta, Peter, who's somewhere in the back, your generosity and wisdom and patience will be missed by all. And ASOL staff, Peter did promise that he will cook for any of your potluck lunches forever. I have it in writing. Right, Peter? So you will be missed, but come and see us anytime. current recruitment, we have started the interview for the user X and web librarian. Those are Skype interviews. We receive a lot of CVs of different profile of people with different skill set. So we started by doing a series of Skype interviews to narrow down a list of preferred candidates that we would then invite for half-a-day interviews. So keep posted to the announcements. Interviews will be in the month of January. I don't see it happening before Christmas. Now, for the next current and upcoming searches, those are a list of positions. There's no specific order, so don't read anything if I start with one and not the others. They should all be there. There's about 12 of them. So we're currently doing a search, a call for volunteers for the position of Ed Librarian at Schulich. We will be posting a position of cataloger in Megan's group, cataloging and metadata. We have two posting ups for programmers in digital initiative to work with Gagandeep. We will be posting a programmer position to work in serials and databases with Andrew. The posting should go up this Friday. We will be posting for a library supervisor in ESSO in replacement of Peter. That one, too, should go up not this coming Friday, but next week. HR advisor, dean's office. I'm impossible to work with. No one wants to come. I have to upgrade the salary scale. E-book specializing cataloging editors with Don. This is a brand new position, and the posting should be up Friday of next week. Senior documentation technician will be posting a position in Rare Books as a senior documentation technician. There will be also a cataloging editor in acquisition and processing. This position is a replacement for Rosa Pellucci. We will be also replacing, if she decides to stay as a specialized cataloging editor, Ariane in her previous role as cataloging editor in acquisition. Same thing for Elisa once she complete her 30 days trial period with Megan. We actually started posting that position and asked for volunteers because Islamic Studies is a little bit of a small team, and we just want to make sure capitalize on the downtime to proceed with the search. And finally, we searched for a documentation technician in ILL a few months ago. The search was unsuccessful. It's still there. To be revived at one point. So those are the positions, the rest of the HR update, and now the fun part for the HR update, which are the pins.
You can tell that she is very busy, and we do need an HR assistant.
Yeah.
And no one can retire. No more. No more till we get all these done. Yeah, so this is the fun part. This is the fun part. Every year we get to hand out jewelry. And I know I say that every year, but I really do enjoy doing this. And I'm jealous because I'll never get one.
But you never know. Wow. You said no one can retire, right?
Yeah, no one can retire.
We'll start with the 15 years and our dear friend and colleague, Tatiana.
Yes.
Yeah, Tatiana. Yeah.
To get photographs.
And also from ESSO, 15 years, Macy.
Yes.
We have also other colleagues celebrating 15 years today, but this year, but unfortunately couldn't be with us. There's Lisa and Ramon from Law.
Bourgeois, and also Alessandra from Collection Department. Now we're... Next group is the 30 years, so we have no 20 this year. So we have Barbara Craig from USO.
There you go.
Oops. That's okay.
One good one anyway. Either that or you have to come back for one. Okay.
Also from USO, we have Emil celebrating 30 years.
Congratulations. Here you go. Oops. That's okay. Okay, calm down. Oh, come back. We have to stand still.
It's okay. Cameras.
It's okay. Sharon. Yeah. Thank you. Here you go.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, where does the next one go?
I don't know.
Thank you.
cook, the oil goes up the witch, and down the sun. I wish to extend congratulations to all of these people again. It's nice to know that people feel good enough about their work that they stick around for. And this is always a great celebration. And I join everybody once again
To thank all of these people for their great service, centuries of service, if you add it all together. And thank you all very, very, very much. And so, we are having a little reception here, so please come and congratulate your colleagues over a cookie. I guess this doesn't move. Most of the time I like something that's animated, but it's pretty nice. It's beautiful. And that's a good way for me to say that I want to particularly thank here at the end of the year all of the people who make these events happen. There's a huge amount of work that goes into these, and it looks like it all happens miraculously behind the scenes, but it doesn't. And particularly to our communications people who make this work every single time, and to Diane and Isabel, whom we have to drag to front and center stage here every single time. But I know that this information is hugely important to all of you. And I hope that you've noticed that we've been working very hard on the weekly updates and the minutes from managers' meetings. And so again, that's a big effort on a lot of people's time, and I really appreciate that very much so. And I want to publicly thank them. Also, we have a new serial. The Roar newsletter was inaugurated today and has a nice lion on it, thanks to Greg. And it's really quite a spectacular publication, considering that Natalie's only been here for like 3 months. It's like, oh my gosh, what do we have in store for us now? Okay, so anyway, please come have a cookie and something to drink. Thank you.